I was offered, somehow, that when I bought the book, I got put on the list of owners of the book, and a financial institution in New York found out, and about 6 months later contacted us and asked if they could buy the book. They offered us $27,000, and I said, absolutely not. It's worth way more than that. So to give you an idea of the value of the book. Now, what it was is the wealthiest people on the planet, again, the Rothschilds, the Morgans, and people like this, are the ones that ended up in the hands. Because Hubert Hal Bancroft, when he published this book to a limited edition, sent it to the wealthiest people as a gift. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is because inside that textbook is a psychological transformation on the way you perceive wealth. And I think this is a cornerstone to start us out. Because unconsciously, or maybe consciously, majority of people on the planet have some sort of interior, unconscious motive to sabotage their wealth building. And the book, in a sense, by the time you finish this book, you have reframed that. Let me just describe that, and we can just build from this. He says there are two driving, motivating forces for the human race. Two main driving forces of the human race, motivators. He said the first one is spiritual and the second is material. He said that the driving force for human beings is their spiritual quest to some degree of immortality, and their second driving force is their material quest for financial freedom. Just like in the ancient Egyptians, it said that spirit without matter is expressionless and matter without spirit is motionless, the two intertwine to make a driving force that is both immortal and freeing. So what this book is describing is the significance of having a spiritual cause and also a material cause, because these are the two driving forces. Everybody here wants to be liberated in their spirit, but they also wants to be liberated in their freedom financially, to be able to have the options and freedom that money can buy. So I'm going to extract from bits and pieces from this text and pass, in a sense, some of the torch of what the greatest people who have ever had wealth in their lives, the greatest institutions, some of the things that they've done in this course. And I think you'll find that very valuable. And it'll be very simple and basic things, so it won't be overwhelming. But there are certain things that stand the test of time and prove themselves. This program is not going to be a get-rich-quick scheme. In fact, in most cases, those actually get you poor quick. How many of you have been caught by a few quick get-rich systems before? So I'm not going to do that, because I found that that's not really the answer in the long run. So I'm going to give you something very methodical, very strategic, very simple to follow, that if you do it, it's going to help you build wealth. But it's a character builder. It's a disciplination process as much as it is a strategy. Let's look at what wealth is. Wealth means well-being. That's what an original term, it meant well-being. So financial mastery is a person who has freed and liberated their lives, and they have attained a state of well-being, a degree of self-actualization, the ability to do what they love and love what they do. That's also part of financial freedom. Their vacation and vocation are, in a sense, synonymous. I'd like to also kind of define money for a moment. Money is simply a means of exchange. That's it, a means of exchange, a medium of exchange. It has no moral value. It's not either good or bad, right or wrong, positive or negative. It's simply a means of exchange of one person's value for another. Something that's a value for you for something that's a value for somebody else. It's a means of exchange. I just finished a book, and somewhere I think in the back is it's called How to Make One Hell of a Profit and Still Get to Heaven. That title came to me when I was in New York a number of years ago, and I finally got around to writing this book. But I was sitting in New York one time with my wife, Athena, and I think most of you know who my wife is, Athena. And she and I were sitting in New York, and we were having dinner with Robin Leach. And I'm assuming you've heard of Robin Leach, no? Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. You've seen this program he's done? We're sitting in Elaine's and having this dinner with Robin, and we were discussing religion and philosophy and wealth, the relationships. And he was saying that he had, in his second show of Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, he was doing a program called Treasures of the Vatican. And what they did is he got permission at the Vatican in Rome to go into the underground chambers and chapels and the areas where they had stored all the art and all the goods and all the wealth that they had, and they got to film this location. And this is what he said. He said, John, if the amount of wealth that's sitting in these football field chambers, size chambers, and all the chapels, which are hundreds and hundreds of chapels, if all of the statues and all the gold and all the diamonds and all the jewels and all the artwork and all the paintings were released and somehow able to be kept at that value but distributed across the world, every human being would be a multimillionaire. He says the vastness of wealth is incomprehensible. Now, the reason I'm saying that is because sometimes in the back of our mind, because of some sort of religious instruction, we've been told that it is more blessed to give than to receive. And I'm going to debunk that. It is more blessed to have fair exchange than anything. I want you to that's one of the laws, is fair exchange. And I'll elaborate on that as we go along. Fair exchange, doing a service that's valuable to them for a reward that is valuable to you of equal exchange. Fair exchange. Tertullian in the second century described, in the early, later centuries, in a book called The Papacy, described the marketing ploys that the Catholic Church did in order to acquire wealth and power. And one of them was to keep them ignorant and impoverished so we had control. So we have to be aware that in case you have a religious strand in your psyche that might be holding you back, thinking that somehow wealth is not well-being or wealth is somehow not honorable, just let you know that that is absolutely erroneous and is actually the contradiction of what is true. Absolutely contradiction of what is true. Hubert L. Bancroft describes beautifully